well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We have a disturbing update in the saga of Patrick Tate Damiak, courtesy of the gun writer Lee Williams. He will join us here in just a second. You know, we've been following Damiak's case both at BearingArms.com and here on the podcast for probably close to a year now. You know, he is the Navy veteran. He was active duty Navy when he was arrested and charged with illegal gun possession, possession of restricted arms. And, you know, as Lee Williams has documented, there were a lot of problems with the case against Tate Damiak to begin with. And the ATF under Joe Biden and under the administration of then ATF Director Steve Dettelbach really went out of their way to, I don't want to say to frame a Damiak, but I guess maybe I do want to say that because that's essentially what happened. You know, turning these inert objects into what they claimed were, you know, working restricted arms, including an RPG, in order to secure a conviction. And as a result, Patrick Tate Damiak was sentenced to 20 years behind bars. He has been behind bars, I believe, a little more than 3 years now. His case was appealed to the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is awfully hostile to gun owners. I mean, this is the same circuit court of appeals that upheld Maryland's handgun licensing law, upheld Maryland's ban on so-called assault weapons. Basically, as they're kind of like the Will Rogers of gun control. They've never met a gun control law they didn't like. And so, as you might imagine, Patrick Damiak did not successfully win his appeal when his case was before the Fourth Circuit. His attorneys have filed a cert petition before the Supreme Court. It is scheduled to be discussed in conference next Friday, I believe. An amicus brief submitted just a couple of days ago. Second Amendment Foundation, National Rifle Association, I believe California Rifle and Pistol Association, and Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus, among the groups that have signed on to this amicus brief, asking the Supreme Court to take up Patrick Tate Damiak's appeal. But as we discussed with Lee, I have to say I'm not particularly optimistic that that is going to happen for reasons that we'll get into. But the latest is that Mr. Damiak has a court hearing here in a little more than a month, not before the Supreme Court, but he is already being moved from the prison where he's been staying to a new facility. And as Lee Williams reports, this isn't just a matter of going from point A to point B, because it looks like this is more like a case of going from point A to point Z with multiple stops in between, a practice that is referred to as diesel therapy. Take a look and a listen. Lee, thanks so much for coming on the program. It's good to see you again.
My pleasure. Thanks for the invite, Cam.
Yeah, I said as we were talking last night, I wish this were a better topic. But, you know, first of all, thanks again for your continued coverage of Patrick Tate Damiak and his legal struggles. I mean, you've been there since the beginning. And I mean, you've written, what, well over 40 pieces about
Mr. Closing in on 50.
So we've got his appeal pending before the Supreme Court. Was very pleased to see a number of Second Amendment organizations have filed an amicus brief asking the court to take his case.
Mm-hmm. Including the Second Amendment Foundation, of course.
Yep. I'm a little troubled that we haven't seen a single justice ask the government to respond. The government waived its right to respond to this cert petition. And, you know, generally you want to see, when that happens, you want to see a justice say, hey, no, we want to hear from you, right? Because that indicates that there's some interest on the court. We haven't seen that to date, unfortunately. But while his case is going on and the appeals are going on, you wrote a really troubling update to what's going on with Mr. Demiak himself, this diesel therapy that he is about to be subjected to. Can you talk about this?
Yeah, it's kind of disgusting, actually. He was notified yesterday he needed to pack up all of his belongings, that they were going to move him. He has a court hearing on the June 25th in Virginia to talk about his case, and they're going to move him 50 days early for that. Now, what this it's diesel therapy. That's what he called it. He said it's diesel therapy. That's exactly what he was afraid of. The Federal Bureau of Prisons does this to inmates. Even the guards call it diesel therapy. Basically, they drive him around for days, for weeks, for more than a month. He's been on it before years ago. They throw him in a van for weeks and they drive him around. Now, most worrisome, he's out of touch with his family, his friends, his attorneys, a reporter like myself. But they also miss showers, they miss food, they miss sleep. They have no opportunity to work on anything legal because they're riding around in a van, possessionless. All the possessions are locked up in back. I mean, this could not come at a worse time for him, because not only does he need to talk to his attorneys about the upcoming legal case, there's the Supreme Court issue that we discussed, and there's a ton of other things that are coming now, too, that I'm not too at liberty to talk about. Let's just say he's reaching out to a lot of right folks. There's a lot of interest in the veterans community. There's a lot of interest in the pro-gun community. There's a lot of things that he needs to be doing. The worst thing for him and trying to get his butt out of prison is to be forced to ride around in a van for 50 days. And he's got literally 100 miles to go to get to his court.
Yeah, he's in New Jersey right now, right?
In New Jersey, court's in PA. It's a quick trip. It does not take 50 days, but I bet he sees all 50 states because he's going to be driving around in a damn van. I got to tell you, brother, it's got me outraged. His dad is Dave Adamiak is incredibly outraged. So after I learned this yesterday, I called and texted and emailed ATF officials and DOJ officials. Did not get a response. These are the same folks that said, "Hey, we're gonna try and work on him. We're gonna try and help him in some way." No response. Now he's gonna be gone. He could leave today. He could leave tomorrow. He could leave early next week. He's gonna be out of the loop, and it could not come at a worse time. It's just infuriating.
It absolutely is, because as you say, you know, this court hearing 50 days from now, if he needs to be moved 100 miles, okay, well, that can be done the day before, 2 days before.
Yeah.
Is there any chance, Lee, that this van will drive from New Jersey to Virginia and deliver Tate Adamiak to his new housing, let's say, you know, with 48 days before his hearing? I mean, is there any chance that this is going to be a straight shot down I-95?
No. So I reached out to Harmeet Dhillon.
Yeah.
I know you've interviewed.
Yeah.
I've never had the pleasure, but she wants to come across as the pro-gun prosecutor. She's running the 2A section. I called, I emailed. I even tried to get a hold of her on X. Nothing, which shows me that the Biden administration, I will say it's 1,000% better than the Trump administration, 1,000% better than the Biden administration. But the Trump administration wants to deal with nice stuff. They only want to talk about things that they want to do. They don't want to talk about the leftover crap from the Biden administration. And this, you got to realize, he was arrested, charged, and imprisoned under Joe Biden for no legitimate legal reason. But our new ATF under Cicada has to take care of these problems. And I'm not seeing them doing that. It's like, for them, time started when Trump took office. And that's not the case. You've still got him. I would say he's doing, well, his dad even said, you know, they're treating him just like they treated Malinowski, except they didn't kill him. They just imprisoned him for 20 years. So I'm waiting to hear from Harmeet. I mean, we have some clear constitutional issues here. I think this is an Eighth Amendment violation. Clearly, you know, the Eighth Amendment bars is excessive bail, fines, and unusual punishment. Mm-hmm. It was written to stop torture. And brother, that's damn near what this is.
Yeah, and as you say, I mean, this isn't, you know, a punishment that is inflicted solely on Tata Damiak, right? This is a procedure that is known. And I confess, I don't know much about this diesel therapy. Is this generally something that, you know, troublemakers are subjected to? Is this something that's just arbitrarily applied to some inmates? What leads somebody to be subjected to this type of?
I called a former DOJ guy, or, I'm sorry, DOC guy who I know, and he said two types of people were usually put on diesel therapy: the real problems and the guys that are making a legal problem. Now, you would think that the DOC would have their hands clean. They, you know, Tate was put in their custody. But for whatever reason, they just want to get rid of him. I don't know. Maybe they were told the order does not come down, I'm told, in a written format. They're just, they're going to move him for his court hearing 50 days early.
I am so upset by this, and you know, I've got actually a request to interview Harmy Dillon outstanding right now, so hopefully we'll be able to get her on the program in the next couple of days, and this will be something that I will try to bring up with her. I suspect
she won't talk to me, so by all means.
Well, and I suspect that, you know, part of the problem here is Damiak's already been convicted, right? So
falsely convicted.
But you know, the verdict has been rendered, and now again, this case is up to final appeal before the U.S. Supreme Court. He is already incarcerated, so I think it would be almost unprecedented for the DOJ to suddenly reverse course and say, "Hey, you know what? This was the wrong thing for us to have done, and we want to make sure that this guy gets sprung now."
I disagree.
I would say completely.
I totally disagree. Yeah. I totally disagree.
Okay.
But as a policeman, I worked with a detective, and he later found out that a guy he sent to prison was innocent.
Yeah.
And he spent 18 months, 2 years of his life getting him to be freed, and they freed him, finally, because it's the right thing to do. You've got Tata Damiak. I don't give a shit what anybody's politics are. I don't care if they're pro Biden or pro Trump. The man did nothing wrong. He went to jail for no reason, went to prison for no reason, and he violated no laws. I don't care if you're Republican, Democrat, or none of the above. We should be working to get him out. It's the right thing to do, clearly. And it needs to be foremost on Harmeet's mind.
Well, again, I don't disagree in theory, but, you know, we have seen how the wheels of justice grind here. And I think that, you know, one of the problems is getting ATF and DOJ to acknowledge that, you know, this was a wrongful conviction, right? That he was charged with, and for those who don't know, he was charged with basically illegally possessing restricted arms, right? But as you've written, one of the things he was, convicted of was possessing, was it basically an RPG, right? But it was a...
He had two dummy RPGs with chock full of holes. And of course, the idiot that they brought in to make him fire, put an RPG kit in there, fires a 7.62 by 39 millimeter round. The gun kit alone will shoot on its own, even not being installed in an RPG. So they shot a round out. Said, oh, it's a live RPG. He had a very expensive semi-auto, MAC-10 style semi-auto handguns that fired from an open bolt. I had never heard of them. They fire semi-automatically from an open bolt. I'll let that sink in. They're legal, 100% legal. There's just a semi-automatic handgun. Was charged with machine guns, possessing machine guns for those. And the list of errors goes on and on. If you want to read about everything that they did wrong, go to my Substack. I've written damn near 50 stories on it where we took everything apart.
Yeah.
But this, it's clear that they wanted, under Biden, they wanted this to go their way. And they made up laws and finagled with the evidence, so they could get this guy in prison. Yeah. I mean, his attorneys were joking about they wanted 30 years. They wanted to send him to prison for 30 years because they found a pile of sheet metal, flats of sheet metal that had been stamped to cut into MAC-10 style receivers. But they were flat pieces of sheet metal. They wanted to charge him with like possessing 976 machine guns for these flat pieces of sheet metal. Thankfully, one of the legal experts who was only allowed to testify about that, because we're talking Fourth Circuit, bro. And right. You know how screwed up the
yeah.
Fourth Circuit.
Oh, yeah.
Was able to knock it down 10 years, or he would be in prison right now for 30 years. So I think he's got a great chance that some people and some federal agencies will help. I think his Supreme Court appeal will do well. We'll see. But right now, his ass is going to be on a bus.
Yeah. Yeah.
For the next month and a half.
You know, and I think, you know, ultimately, most directly, I mean, this is something that the Bureau of Prisons needs to answer for, right? I mean, we can talk about ATF and DOJ, but it is the Bureau of Prisons that ultimately issued this order that is putting Tata Demiak in the back of this van and driving him around. Is there any way, you know, again, you say there's no chance that he's just going to go directly to Virginia where his next court hearing is, but there's no way that his attorney, his family is going to know where he is on any given day. They're just
correct.
Somewhere.
He's going to be, you know, right now where he's at in prison at Fort Dix, New Jersey.
Yeah.
There's a system that he can use to get a hold of me, to get a hold of his dad, to get a hold of his brother. They all know the phone numbers. They all know he's going to be in the back of a van, bro. And he's not going to have a cell or any form of communication. So they're putting him in a deep, dark hole for 50 days. Unless things change.
Well, Lee, again, I cannot thank you enough for all of your coverage. I would love to have you back when we know more. And as I said, I'll do what I can to try to get some answers from some of the alphabet agencies in DC. But again, I really appreciate you shining a light on this because, you know, what is happening to Patrick Tata Demiak is, you know, it would be laughable if it weren't so damn serious. I mean,
I know.
Ultimately,
I know.
You know, that's Kafka-esque.
The problem right there, you know, if we were talking about this and it was some other guy, you know, it would be different. But Tate is a solid American, never sold an illegal gun part, was going to, right now he'd be a SEAL. Okay. He'd be leading a SEAL platoon as an officer. That's what they took from us, from this country. That's what Joe Biden's ATF did. And to me, that's criminal.
Yeah. Well, again, I would encourage folks who are listening and watching to follow Lee, go to his Substack, The Gun Writer, and keep up with the latest here. Thanks again to the Second Amendment Foundation for their investigative journalism project that allows you, Lee, to keep pursuing this story. And again, man, just thank you for your effort. Thank you for not letting this story go and not letting Tata Demiak be forgotten.
We're not gonna stop until he's free.
Lee Williams, thank you so much for your time, sir.
Thanks for the interview. Appreciate it.
My thanks again to Lee for joining us on the program and again for all of his coverage here. And I will, you know, do my best to try to talk with Harmy Dillon and others. I think part of the problem is I don't even know that this is something under Harmy Dillon's purview. You know, DOJ is fairly siloed, right? I mean, you've got Maine Justice and then you've got the U.S. attorneys all around the country, and it's been the U.S. Attorney's office, I believe in Virginia, where Demiak was prosecuted, that has been handling this case. I don't know that it's ever really gone up to Maine Justice. Now that the cert petition is before the Supreme Court, the Solicitor General's office could and arguably should get involved here, right? But the government waived its right to respond to his cert petition. That would have been a decision made by the Solicitor General's office, or a request made by the Solicitor General's office. And again, to date, none of the judges, or none of the justices, rather, on the Supreme Court have told the government, hey, we want you to reply. We want to know your side of the story here. You would like to see that before this case gets discussed in conference. And even then, there's no guarantee, right? The Supreme Court did ask for a reply in Schoenthal versus Raul. They ultimately denied cert in that case. Case out of Maryland, Gardner, which dealt with, you know, concealed carry reciprocity or the lack thereof, being able to carry in a state. You've got a valid permit, but it's not recognized by the state. A request was made for the state of Maryland to reply to that cert petition. And again, it was denied. Ultimately, the cert petition was denied. So even if, excuse me, one or more justices say to the government, hey, we want to know what your reply to this would be, that alone is, you know, no lock that a cert petition is going to be granted. But without that request being made, if the, you know, the plaintiff in this case is not tasked with providing a reply, if none is even asked for, unfortunately, I think that's a really good indication that the cert petition is going to be denied. And if that's the case, that leaves Tata Damiak with essentially a pardon or a commutation being his only way out of prison before the vast majority of that 20-year sentence has been served. Again, I'm still keeping my fingers crossed that in the next couple of days we'll see that request made to the Solicitor General in a Damiak's case. And if that does happen, then his case would most likely not be discussed at the May 14th conference. But if it's pushed off in order to give the DOJ time to reply, that'd be great. But, you know, again, DOJ is so siloed here. Every government agency is. So I don't know that this would be on Harmy Dillon's radar or even Robert Sakata's radar over at the ATF. I don't even know what the ATF honestly could do at this point, which is why I brought up the Bureau of Prisons. But this specific incident that we're talking about here, the diesel therapy, that is a Bureau of Prisons decision. And that's where I think the questions need to be asked. I think that's where the answers need to be provided at this point. And again, I don't know that we're going to get any answers, but hopefully I'm an eternal optimist. I am hoping against hope that this is a short, quick trip for a Tata Damiak down I-95 from New Jersey to Virginia, and he doesn't end up in Montana or Utah or Missouri on his way from New Jersey to Virginia for that court hearing. We will keep you updated as best we can. In the meantime, let's turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We will start there with a case out of Chicago. Speaking of Schoenthal versus Arule, that was the challenge to the ban on lawful concealed carry on public transit in Illinois. District Court judge said, yeah, this violates the Second Amendment. Seventh Circuit said, no, it doesn't, because trains and buses, why those are crowded public places where vulnerable populations might exist. And there's a national tradition of banning firearms in crowded public places where vulnerable populations might exist. No, there's not. Supreme Court actually said the opposite in the Bruin decision. You cannot ban guns in the entirety of Manhattan, they said, just because it's crowded and there's generally a police presence there. Seventh Circuit ignored that completely. And unfortunately, when the case got up to the Supreme Court did not hold the Seventh Circuit to account, and they let the Seventh Circuit decision stand. So right now, and for the foreseeable future, it is against the law for individuals to lawfully carry a concealed firearm on the Chicago Transit Authority property. Buses, trains, bus stops, train stations. And the CTA continues to be a hunting ground for violent offenders, including this guy, the king of the CTA. CWB Chicago's headline, man from viral red line hammer video jailed after threatening sheriff's police, prosecutors say. This individual in question, 51-year-old Eric Vinson, has been arrested at least 49 times since 2015, including twice since they say he gained a fleeting moment of internet fame with a cell phone video that was taken just a couple of months ago in March. There was video that went around showing him boarding a red line train, threatening to kill people while he had two hammers He is now released briefly in the Cook County Jail after threatening to kill a sheriff's police officer who woke him up and told him he couldn't sleep on the Red Line train. And he threatened that sheriff's deputy with hammers, allegedly. The footage that was taken from March showed him boarding this Red Line train. He had a metal hammer in each hand, threatening to kill passengers, one of whom took out their phone and recorded this. Other passengers tried to ignore him by looking at their phone, staring at the floor. Ultimately, no injuries were reported, thankfully. And then about 10 days later, March 27th, Chicago police arrested Vincent after he allegedly threatened to kill a 55-year-old service station employee with a hammer, threatened to hit the cashier and customers with a hammer. The employee was able to retreat behind a security partition, called 911. It was the second time that day that Vincent had apparently caused a disturbance at the gas station. And when police detained him, he allegedly told them, quote, "I promise to Jesus I'm going to kill that Arab retard." Yeah. When he was taken to local police station, officers discovered more than 7 CTA security information bulletins mentioning Vincent and his violent tendencies. They cited Vincent. They gave him a notice to appear in court. They took him to a local hospital for a psychiatric evaluation. He failed to show up for that court date, but so did the victim. And so the case was dropped. And then 3 days later, April 19th, sheriff deputies patrolling the Red Line allegedly saw Vincent sleeping across a row of seats on a train, 2 hammers protruding from a backpack on the seat next to him. They recognized him from the security reports as well as recent news stories. They woke him up, said, "Hey, man, you can't sleep on the train." Prosecutor said he became agitated and declared that he was king of the CTA. And then allegedly threatened to strike an officer in the head and, quote, "blow the back of his head off." He repeated the threat approximately 9 times, according to prosecutors, which led to his being detained when the train reached its next stop. He is now charged with threatening a public official. Judge Robert Kouzis, according to CWB Chicago, detained him as a public safety risk. We'll see how long that lasts. There have been more than 80 separate cases filed against Vincent's name dating back to 1997. Just 4 of them have been felonies. So the vast majority of these cases, again, are you know, misdemeanor charges. But most of them, again, are at least violent in nature in terms of the threats that have been made. 46 arrests by the Chicago police since 2015. There have been additional arrests by other agencies. CWB Chicago reports that he did get a 41-month sentence for a robbery case in 2010. He ended up pleading guilty to aggravated battery causing great bodily harm. He got 13 months for a 2023 criminal damage to property case. And then in 2024, he was sentenced to 2 years for robbery. He ended up pleading guilty to unlawful restraint. Now, again, that was 2 years ago. Why is he already out? He got a 2-year sentence. And the reason is because in Illinois, under the Safety Act, for every day you spend behind bars, you get a day knocked off of your sentence. So a 10-year sentence becomes 5 years. A 5-year sentence becomes 2.5. A 2-year sentence becomes 1 year. Not only that, but every day that you are either in jail awaiting trial or even out on electronic monitoring while you're waiting trial counts as a day behind bars. So if you spend 3 months with an ankle monitor attached to you, you're sleeping at home, you've got permission by a judge to be out and about for, you know, 12 to 16 hours a day, you still get 3 months knocked off your sentence, which is just mind-boggling to me. So again, you know, 49, 46 arrests essentially over the past 10 years. Not much time behind bars to show for it. And frankly, even if Mr. Vincent were subject to felony prosecution right now, I'm not sure that it would do much, thanks to Illinois' soft-on-crime policies. Now, today's Armed Citizen story, we do have an update from a story we told you about earlier in the week, this attempted carjacking in Garland, Texas, where the attempted carjacker was shot and killed. We now know a little bit more about the individual. And this story, by the way, since we first started talking about it, has really blown up. It's gone national, in large part because there was video at the scene. And, you know, you can have the most compelling defensive gun use in the world, there's no video of it, most media outlets aren't going to pay any attention to it, at least from a national perspective. You may get local coverage, but it's not going to really take off nationally. This story has. In fact, the New York Post with the headline, illegal immigrant ID'd as attempted carjacker, gunned down by Texas dad protecting his family of eight. So we knew that the armed citizen was in this vehicle with his family, including kids. Didn't know that he had that many kids. And we didn't know really anything about the suspected carjacker other than he had been involved in, police said he had been involved in a hit and run a short time earlier. He tried to drive away. For whatever reason, he got out of his car, goes to a gas station, tries to forcibly take a few other vehicles, gets behind the wheel of one of them, but apparently the keys weren't in it, couldn't get it started, couldn't drive off. So he leaves the gas station, runs across the street in Garland, Texas, to this convenience store, tries to get behind the wheel of this Chevy Impala, and the driver, who is assaulted, ends up shooting the would-be carjacker. That was the initial report, right? So we now know this individual was 30-year-old Jose Ramirez, identified as an illegal immigrant from Mexico. According to the New York Post, investigators told Fox 4 Dallas that Ramirez was a Mexican national living in the United States illegally, was not a Garland resident, and is not known when or where Ramirez entered the United States. He allegedly crashed into two cars about 3:30 in the afternoon. I think this was last Sunday, before again fleeing to that nearby gas station and then running over to the convenience store. New York Post reports that Ramirez prompted the father, who'd been sitting in the driver's seat of that Chevy Impala, to exit the vehicle while, quote, several children and two adult females were inside. There was a struggle between the armed citizen and Ramirez as the family bolted from the car to safety. The dad then drew his gun, fired more than 10 rounds at the suspect. State of the scene, cooperated with investigators. Garland police have ruled this to be a case of self-defense. One police official said that the driver was defending himself and was fighting with that suspect. We're looking at this as a self-defense case. We're also looking into why the suspect did what he did. And it may be that Ramirez was concerned about being deported. It may be that Ramirez maybe had committed additional crimes and was concerned about being taken into custody. But for whatever reason, he again decided to carjack multiple vehicles unsuccessfully and then encountered this armed citizen who was prepared to protect himself and his family. So if we do get any more updates, we'll bring them to you. But that's what we know about this defensive gun use in Garland, Texas over the weekend. And finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, willing able to do the right thing, a string of volunteers who were able to reunite Sierra the Husky with her owner, who hadn't seen her in 12 years. That's amazing to me. And if you are a animal lover like I am, this story definitely pulls at the heartstrings, right? Here is a Sierra the Husky, by the way. Very good girl. Sierra and her owner were living in New Mexico back in 2014. Her owner is a guy named Bryce. He said he remembered that she had gotten loose when a friend was looking after her and she disappeared. He was getting ready to make a move, and that was the last time he saw her. April 8th in Hernando County, Florida, the Hernando County Sheriff's Office Animal Services Unit took in this husky as a stray. She was missing patches of fur. Her body, according to the sheriff's office, was showing the wear of time and hardship. But she had a microchip. And so they were able to scan the chip, which gave them a phone number, gave them a name, Bryce's name. Officials said that when Bryce saw Sierra's intake photos, his heart broke for the condition that she was in, but at the same time, he was overwhelmed with emotion knowing that she was still out there and that he might get the chance to see her again. So the authorities gave Sierra medical treatment, gave her regular walks, said she also received, quote, endless love from staff and volunteers. And about a week later, they tried to reunite Bryce and Sierra. Bryce now lives in Midland, Texas, in a team of 18 different volunteers, drove 1,400 miles with Sierra over the course of a single weekend. Best Western put them up in motels along the way. And as the sheriff's office says, with the incredible help of We Rate Dogs and a generous sponsorship from Best Western, Sierra began her trek to Texas and back to the person who never forgot her. According to We Rate Dogs, Sierra did not recognize Bryce, but has very quickly settled in to her new life with her old owner. And, you know, the sheriff's office said, you know, this is a really good example of how a simple microchip changed everything. Without it, Sierra may just have been another lost stray with no way to reconnect her to her past. I wish the dogs could talk, because I would love to know Sierra's story over the past 12 years. It's shocking to me that she was apparently not ever scanned before now, and how she ended up in Florida after, you know, running away in New Mexico. It's probably a story all its own, one we'll never know, but at least Sierra's story has a happy ending, reunited with her former owner, thanks again to, you know, sounds like well over 24 individuals who all played a role in getting her back to Bryce there in the Lone Star State. So to each and every one of those individuals who helped give Sierra's story a happy ending, we thank you for your very, very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I do want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. I'm looking forward to seeing you back here again on Monday. But be sure to check out BearingArms.com. Today, Friday, throughout the weekend, we're going to be keeping you up to date on all the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. We're not doing it via AI slop. We're not making stuff up like some of those YouTube channels out there. No, everything that we're talking about is really happening, the good, the bad, and the ugly. For better or worse, but yeah, you're not going to be getting these hallucinating stories like we talked about with the Jim Wallace on the program yesterday. 340,000 views for that nonsense story about the Supreme Court declaring every gun permitting law across the nation unconstitutional. That's sad and disturbing, but again, we appreciate your support. Do check out the website between now and Monday. We'll keep you informed about everything that's going on with your right to keep and bear arms. And if you like what you see, we'd encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold or VIP Platinum member. Just go to BearingArms.com/subscribe. Use the promo code FIGHT and take 60% off your membership. No matter what tier of support you choose, you'll be supporting the work we're doing at Bearing Arms. And I want to thank you very much for that support, because it does make a difference and it really means a lot. Have a great rest of your week and a wonderful weekend. Until we talk again, be well. Be safe and be free.